Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Tomorrow is Veterans Day, this weekend at the Air and Space Museum at the Ellsworth Air Force Base. A tribute to the troops with a focus on honoring those who have served since 9/11. The program is presented in partnership with the Black Hills Veterans Writing Group. With us today for more is retired Air Force Major Bob Liebman. Major Liebman, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Are you hearing me?
Yes, I hear you now, sir. How are you?
Great. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous day.
You can't beat this for November, can you?
This is Chamber of Commerce weather.
Take our pictures now, right? Because it's coming for us. Let's talk with your service, and then we'll talk a little bit about this event. It's sort of hard to explain your role to people and what you did. Why don't you go ahead and lay it out for us now?
Well, first, I'm an 80s guy, so that's when I joined the Air Force right out of college and had the opportunity to go to flying training and came out as a bombardier navigator, actually electronic warfare officer. I was in the B-52s for a couple of years and then had the opportunity to transfer over to the B-1 fleet. Mm. And so this was right at the end game of the Cold War, and obviously the big strategic nuclear mission was our primary focus at that point.
Now, I was talking with South Dakota Secretary of Veterans Affairs Larry Zimmerman earlier. We're talking about some of the forgotten veterans, or those that we think about less often. Cold War also comes to mind a little bit. Do you think that we do a good enough job of sort of remembering and honoring those folks who did the things that maybe we didn't get to watch on the internet?
Well, the great thing about history and museums and things like that is that it gives you an opportunity to take a closer look in the rearview mirror, if you will, and preserve some of that. And while you're experiencing something, especially a military or combat type thing, it's what's going on around you that you really retain and remember. And it takes some time to review and learn more about it and talk to other people that were in other places and expand your understanding of it, and that certainly applies to the Cold War on a grand scale, really, because there were everything from technological issues and events to political things and obviously national security and our place in it was right at the heart of all that. And you know, there were exciting times, there were scary times, there were things that were hilarious too, but just all you know, you get a little more context with history.
Sure, sure. Is endgame the right word to use? I served in Korea, and when we talk about during the same, you know, 80s, 90s time frame, we talk about the end of the Cold War, and I look at Korea, North Korea, and I say not so fast. Do you think that that's the right word, endgame?
I'm sorry, the connection is a little rough. What was that word?
Endgame. You know, do you think
do we think
it's okay to say that, you know, the Cold War is over in a technical terms, or should we think about it more broadly than that?
Well, the Cold War, I think, is a way of describing a period of history from the end of World War II through the fall of the Soviet Union, in the sense that you had a very highly focused set of tensions, and it provided context for other hot wars that were going on as well, and things that we remember from that era that now you have to kind of poke around in the history books to find are things called proxy wars and rush fire wars and MiG diplomacy, and the Cold War was a spectrum of activities all the way from James Bond kind of things to, you know, space program legacies and some really serious issues, obviously, in Korea and Vietnam and other places around the world, not quite as visible. And there were parts of it that were hot wars. The reason it's called the Cold War is that the nukes weren't used. Mm-hmm. And there is a, you know, that's sort of the larger context of that. But it was a time of very serious tensions, really, between the free world and the communist countries is what it comes down to.
Tell me what some of those moments were like for you. What can you share with people, you know, looking back after these years?
Well, again, being an 80s guy, I grew up as a child of World War II generation, World War II vets. And so there was a lot of this that had developed on their watch, if you will, that, you know, as you're younger, you're still kind of learning about this stuff as you grow up. And then you go to college and getting just more involved and aware of things and start to understand a little bit more of where you're at. And again, in the rearview mirror, it looks like a fait accompli and a done deal. But at the time, you really don't know how this thing is going to go. And the issue of the day was, hey, there are real threats across the spectrum here from the communist world, particularly the Soviet Union, but then also some of their associates there. And, you know, there are various dangers, different levels of geopolitical, you know, the KGB and all this kind of stuff. This is, you know, partly a human condition, but partly it's also, hey, this is a very serious instance of something that threatens our national security. And, you know, there's the cool factor of aviation that maybe motivates you to join and get involved with that. But then you start to see the real mission stuff, and mm-hmm. wow, this is serious business. Mm-hmm.
What kind of conversations are you having with younger veterans who are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq and places today to sort of form those connections between veterans over time?
Well, I think the first thing they need to know is that we're really proud of them. Mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity as an officer to supervise enlisted people and junior officers and, of course, my colleagues and people up and down the chain of command. But, you know, there's a lot about this mission, national security, and about war itself that just never really changes. And the training and, again, the challenges and the just the long hours and work, and then, you know, sometimes you get to take a break and the heartbreak and all that, but it's worth it, and the nation really is grateful for that. And, you know, the expressions of gratitude that you get out there, the little care packages and cards and things like that, that's appreciated out there. And as folks come back, I think a lot of us are conscious as well from that Cold War era that the Vietnam vets stepped into a political maelstrom and were not treated well there. And even in the 80s, there was some blowback to that of, hey, no, these guys have really done something important for us and they need to be respected and thanked for it. And I worked for some of those guys mm-hmm. when I started out in the Air Force, and they're the best people I ever worked for. And I thank the Vietnam vets. Maybe that's a thing to say there as well for the training and the mentoring and the inspiration that I had as a young guy. And so hopefully we can do that for the younger ones. But yeah, really, really impressive. You know, people slagging off of the millennial generation, what have you. But from what I saw in the armed services today, they're just really super.
More than 21,000 South Dakotans have served the country since September 11th is what they shared with me in a press release. 21,000 seems like a pretty significant number from a state for a fairly short period of time.
And the active duty component here obviously is smaller, and that's their job 24/7. But you really got to recognize the National Guard folks mm-hmm. as well. Really super. They've done a lot of heavy lifting, and whether it was turning wrenches on airplanes or out there in the boonies and armed convoys and things, every guardsman that I ran into out there was as sharp and motivated and well-trained as they could be, every one of them. And so a lot of respect for the National Guard, because they come back to a normal, you know, in air quotes, world, you know, back to a job and family and what have you, and they get their training when they can, these traditional guardsmen. And they have to step away from that, you know, something that's not expected of them 24/7, and go overseas and perform. And, yeah, really super.
Hmm. Talk to me a little bit about leadership and things that you learned as an officer in the Air Force that you then, you know, that affected the rest of your life and how you work outside the military. Let's just dig into leadership a little bit.
Well, there's leadership at every level, and one of the things that I said to our older boy when he went off to boot camp, he's a Marine veteran. By the way, happy birthday, Marine, today. Excuse me. And he went off to Afghanistan, but on his way, you know, he's right out of high school, kind of a wild child, and he really was motivated to be a Marine. And he, you know, when the day actually comes, when you're going to step on the bus and go do it, and the advice I gave him was, you know, do what you're told, do your best at everything, and help your buds. And what that really is followership, but that sort of thing is what makes you a leader from within. And so, you know, you have layers of it, if you will, and the people that stay in and, you know, become the senior NCOs and all that, that's the bread and butter, or sergeants, if you will, petty officers of the Navy. That's the real bread and butter of the armed services, and that's, you know, significant leadership demands on those people. And then you get up into the officer level, and you're expected to have a little bit more of a broad view of the mission and what's expected, and impart that to your folks, and so on, right up the chain. And there are people that I've worked with now that are 3-star generals, you know, and the level of responsibility that goes with that increases as you go up there, and there's a lot of demands on those people.
The event is this weekend on Saturday. It's at the Air and Space Museum at the Ellsworth Air Force Base, a tribute to the troops. The focus is honoring those who have served since 9/11, and our guest today has been a retired Air Force Major Bob Liebman, and you're giving a presentation on Saturday, is that correct?
I'm sorry, say again?
You're giving a presentation on Saturday as part of that program, correct?
Well, there's about 3 or 4 of us that are post 9/11 vets that are going to briefly describe our experiences and just really more representative of what's there. We hope the post 9/11, the younger vets will come on out and let us give them some recognition. We'll have refreshments out there, some officials from the state and the VA, and senior military folks will make some more sort of formal statements of gratitude, but we really... we want to say thank you to these people and really to their families for the sacrifices. And, you know, national security is not just this abstract hypothetical. It takes real people doing real things, and some of it's very dangerous and demanding. And proud to have been part of the team, and I think that's kind of that's the spirit of it. And so, you know, hopefully we'll see everybody from all the services, get our son and some of his Marine buddies out there.
Well, sir, we're going to have to let you go and say thank you for your service and thank you for your time. We'll see you this weekend.
Thank you for that. Hope to see you at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum.